All right, guys, it's Thursday evening. That's right. That means it's time for Illegal Shift. We're going to talk some sports, break some stuff down. It's me and Keith, your favorite sports show on Failure to Stop.
The growing calls across the nation to defund the...
giving them business down there. That's a 15-yard penalty.
No foul on the play. It was not a hold. The defender was just overpowered.
Illegal Shift. On the kicking team, that penalty is refused. First down.
God's up, giddy up, Wolfpack. It's Failure to Stop, your absolutely favorite podcast on earth. I'm John. I'm an active 911 dispatcher in the field. I'm joined by Chief Keefe, who's a firefighter out there in Cincinnati. We are doing Illegal Shift, but Failure to Stop is your number one podcast and platform where we entertain and inform first responders and their friends. We're going to talk to you about some sports, but before we do that, I just want to check in with Keith. Keith, how are you doing, man? It's been a week since I've seen you. How's everything going there in the Buckeye State?
Things are good, John. Glad to be back. I always look forward to chatting with you each week, so you look good.
Trying hard not to be weird, Keith.
I know it's hard for you right now.
It's so hard. It's very, very difficult. Folks, the show is brought to you by Ghostbed. Ghostbed's a show that will, Ghostbed might be a show. The other day, Keith, when I was doing the search engine optimization for true crime, it recommended that I title the show the Ghostbed and Factor Meal Sponsorship Show, because the AI just recognized that was the best part of the show was when I did the ad read, so... This is the Ghostbed and Factor Meal Sponsorship Show. Go over to Ghostbed, use the Wolfpack, the offer code Wolfpack. You can save 40% on everything they have on their website. They've got mattresses, adjustable frames, pillows, everything that you need for an awesome night of sleep. Go over there and you could save 40%. It sleeps so good, it's scary, according to Eric Tanzi, of course. I don't know if people are listening, but you should definitely go over to Ghostbed because it saves us all from slavery. They're the ones who are really the ones paying the bills around here, so we appreciate them. And of course, Keith, they're the only ones who are making their mattresses in the good old USA.
That was a little better.
Yeah, I was a little anemic. I'm always afraid to start it off because especially on Tuesday, again, referring back to true crime, I did 10 chants vigorously of USA and Kendra would not join in. Possibly because she hates the United States of America. Possibly because she hates me. Possibly because she hates Rocky IV. But it's not because she hates Ghostbed. She loves Ghostbed. They've been a great sponsor of this show. They support veterans, first responders. The offer code Wolfpack is for our listeners. You can go over there and save 40% or more. We appreciate Ghostbed always supporting us. Of course, then there's Factor Meals. After you wake up in the morning and you're fully recharged from your night of Ghostbed sleep, you're going to want to make sure that you're eating well. Factor Meals can have over 300 options of meals delivered right to your door, reverse trick-or-treat style. You go to their website. You could pick out in advance what you'd like to eat for the week. It would deliver to your house. It's fresh, never frozen food. You can throw it into the microwave for just 2 minutes, and you've got something hot to eat. The rest can go into your fridge or freezer for you to plan out the rest of your week so that you can not eat on a whim, not eat when you're feeling hangry or tired or lonesome, or eating your feelings about the latest travesty that is taking place on the Earth's surface. But you can plan out all of your meals there. It's a great way to do it. And if you've got a diet where you want to meet specific goals, whether it's restricting your calories or increasing your protein, you could do all of your meal planning with Factor Meals. We appreciate them. Use the offer code WOLFPACK50. Go over there and save 50% on your first week. Thank you to Factor Meals for supporting us. And then, of course, also is the Wellness Company. You can own your health and you own your wellness and your freedom with Wellness Company. Get well and stay well with solutions designed by top doctors. They offer natural supplements like melatonin to help you have great sleep and bizarre dreams, if that's what you're looking for. But also immune support, daily essentials for your mind and energy, your digestion, your metabolism, everything you need. Both Jason and I are kind of getting older in life to the point where, like, we need a pill to just feel normal. Like, if you're 20, like, you feel correct, right? Like, you feel good all the time. Like, at our age, like, we need supplements. We need Centrum Silver to feel like you feel. But you can get prescription meds like antibiotics, stock up for the next emergency, first aid kits, contagion kits, medical kits. Get a membership and you can free yourself from Big Pharma over at the Wellness Company. Use the offer code Wolfpack. You get 10% off right away. That's something that's going to be important with the future being the way that the future might be. Just remember back during 2020 when we didn't have the stuff that we needed, not even toilet paper. You just never know what's going to happen. And this is an election year, but not to be too grim, but you know, there's always a chance that there could be a run on something. So make sure you're stocking up on the stuff you need now. Speaking of being ready, do that with CountyCom. CountyCom has everything you need to prepare, explore, and survive. Go to countycom.com. Check out their online store. They've got everything for everyday carry. Keith, I'm talking about powerful flashlights, utility knives, multi-tools, camping tools, radios, compasses, lighters, fire starter kits, all the stuff that is the bane of firefighters every California summer. You can buy it over at CountyCom. You can get everything that you need for your everyday carry. You don't want to be unprepared in your daily life. You can find that over at CountyCom. And you can trust them because they've been in business most of my life. And I just alluded to the fact that I'm quite advanced in age. You can get free domestic shipping on any order over $125. They've got great deals and they have awesome rewards program over on their website, countycom.com. That's county, C-O-M-M.com. Follow them on Instagram as well. Check out their products and everything they've got. I appreciate them monetizing me. That's a great deal for me. Really, no one else. Everybody likes to be the prepared guy. Be that guy with CountyCom. Keith, we've got all kinds of great stuff going on in the news. I don't know where to start with the rule changes going on in the NFL. The Cowboys basically packing it in for the season. Where would you like to start?
Let's let your rant go with the Cowboys packing it in before what would getting ready to be April, and you're already done. You're already done with them.
Well, so free agency just happened. We saw no big moves. They signed a guy named Kendricks to linebacker. They made a small deal on him, and they signed nobody else. And they let a whole bunch of veterans get away. Tyron Smith, a bunch of guys on defense, Jonathan Hankins, Tony Pollard, the running back. There's nobody in the building at this point. Like, if we had to play a game today, we wouldn't have enough players to play. And this is all on the heels of Jerry Jones after the Packers game, in which we were humiliated, like, no other game in Cowboys history, saying, you know, we're all in for 2024. And there's a collective groan from Cowboys Nation, just like, oh, man, like, it's just Jerry being more Jerry and Jerry never learning his lesson, Jerry never changing things. So now some Cowboys fans are mad because, you know, with everybody leaving a free agency and us signing no big deals, it's like, well, we're not all in on 2024. Like, we're not trying. And I guess I just wanted to bring some clarity to what's going on. In order to create cap space, I believe we only have about $5 million of cap space.
I think that's what I saw. Yeah.
Which is not, yeah, it's just under $5 million. Now they could extend the cap if they extended CeeDee Lamb and Dak Prescott. Both are in their final years of their contracts. Dak, of course, was on a big deal that I think they made to him in 2020, which was controversial at the time. Skip Bayless loved it, of course. Every time Skip Bayless comes up in my newsfeed, I'm just like, why does anyone pay attention to Skip Bayless?
That guy.
I get why people don't pay attention to me, but why are they paying attention to Skip Bayless? Like, it's just proof
that guy.
It's proof that the universe is unfair. They could save almost $36 million if they extended CeeDee Lamb, who's on his rookie contract, and quarterback Dak Prescott, which means both of them are entering their final year. You know who else is entering their final year? Coach McCarthy.
Yep.
So what's going on is that they're all on 1 year left. I think the amazing thing is that McCarthy, you know, every year that he's been there, we've had at least 12 wins, which are good seasons. We Cowboys fans are always we're always put in the worst position because we have these great competitive seasons and it gets our hopes up every year and it gets us to buy all this Jerry merch, right? It's like the perfect storm of enticement and frustration because we have these great seasons. We go out there and get 12 wins and then it's all for naught because we're blown out in the first round of the playoffs and we're humiliated and shamed and go into a spiral and all this. So we have to say at some point, this is what I was saying, you know, months ago after the playoffs, is like, we have to say at some point that we're willing to risk having a season where we go 8-9 because we need to make a change. You know, I like having games where I get to watch them blow the Giants out. That's fun. But ultimately, you know, it, we're getting blue balled in January when nothing comes of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, you want to get back to the Super Bowl. I mean, that's the goal of every NFL team. And I was shocked as the free agency moves were happening that there sat Dallas doing absolutely nothing.
Well, the funny thing is that, you know, Facebook is a way of keeping track of past disappointments, because of my Facebook memories. All this week, like, I'm getting little status updates. I'm like, for God's sakes, Jerry, would you please make some moves while there's still some good players left on the board? And as I mentioned last week, that beam, like, the Dallas Cowboys signed nobody. Our strategy is always that we never make big moves in free agency. And I don't know if that's because players generally don't want to play for the Cowboys. If anytime there's some sort of trade or negotiation going on, other teams don't like Jerry. I could completely understand that. He's not that likable of a guy. But
the Bengals were like that for a very long time as well. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm understanding and feeling your pain now here, you know, between last year and this year. I mean, essentially since we got Burrow, the Brown family has actually started doing some wheeling and dealing and stuff, which is weird for us, because we're sitting back looking, going, oh shit, do we have enough money? Are they going to want to come play in Cincinnati? I mean, just with our checkered past. So, I mean, I completely get it though. And it's very uncharted territory for us. We're like, oh, holy crap. We just, we just picked up this guy, or we dealt this guy off. I mean, getting rid of Mixon, I knew it was probably coming, but I didn't expect it. You know, it's just once it happens, you're like, oh, okay. Well, now what?
Well, now Dallas faces the prospect of having a very shitty season, because we don't even have like a bulk of the players that we had last year. Stephen Jones was quoted as saying, well, what we meant by all in was saying we're going to retain the core. I'm just like, this is the lamest spin I've ever heard. Like, you're going to go all in by retaining some of the players you had last year, not like keeping everybody, and then making sure that, like, you know, where we had problems, like say running back, like you're not gonna, like, you know, draft high for a running back and, you know, inject some juice back into the running game. You're gonna let everybody go. You're gonna retain some players who had no choice but to play here next year anyway. That's what you mean by all in. It's like all the people that have to be here will be here next year. You know, that's what all in means for Stephen Jones. But it's just it's more brinksmanship from Jerry on Dak Prescott, though, because he did the same thing with his contract before. I think it was in 2020, whatever year it was, a couple years ago when he signed that contract. It would have been 2020, I guess, because it would have been a 5-year contract, I'm sure. But, you know, letting him come down to the wire as to whether or not to extend him or let him meet free agency. And he's putting him in the same position again. He's doing the same thing with McCarthy, where it's basically, you know, you win or you're going to get fired is the statement that's being made to both Dak and McCarthy. I don't think it's necessarily being made to Lamb. Lamb's going to get a contract. It's just not happening right now because there's no money to give him. And if he's got 1 year left anyway, there's no reason why they don't just make him that deal down the road. I think Lamb knows that he's not going anywhere. He set franchise records this past season for the Cowboys. He was doing really well. And if they can find somebody else who's very good at throwing to him, you know, I think that Jerry will go for that. But the team just seems like we're not doing anything this year, because everybody has one more year in the contract, meaning McCarthy, meaning Dak. We're letting all these players go. We're not bringing anybody in. We're going to try to draft well. The only thing that I could think of that would save this season, make this season even competitive, is if we, on draft day, just make a whole bunch of shocking moves and, you know, move up in the draft and take big players like we've never done before, or that we haven't done in a long time. I don't think that's going to happen, though, because people, like I said, they don't like dealing with Jerry. If I was Jerry Jones, you know what I would be doing? I would look at myself and realize, like, I'm probably not going to be alive in 10 years. I should be trading away draft picks for the year 2035. And just completely going all in now while I'm still alive to see the Cowboys win another Super Bowl. And then who cares, you know, what happens to Stephen Jones or whoever owns the team after I'm dead? You know, who cares if we go 10 years and we can never do anything because we don't have any draft picks or whatever? That's just what I would do if I was Jerry Jones. I would start planning for the future, meaning the future of me being dead, and trying really hard to get something done now. But
I gotta tell you, deal with it after I'm gone.
Exactly. But as a Cowboys fan, it looks pretty grim. We are good at drafting. I would say Jerry's good at drafting. That's the main thing he's good at. So we're going to rely on our strengths going into the spring. But there's not a whole lot looking that we have to look forward to this year. It's going to be a much diminished team from last year. And last year's team was pretty good. So I don't know.
You've got Dak in the last year of his contract. He's what, 30 years old?
He's around there, yeah. Once we switched over to an era in which NFL players were younger than me, I'll never forget how shocking that was to my conscience. It's like, wow, the players, they'll have Tom Brady go out on the field. And, you know, Tom Brady's like, my God, man, look at him. He's a walking miracle. He's out there playing football. He's 34. I'm just like, geez, man, it's just, yeah, I guess for me to do what they would do, it, I would have to be some sort of miracle person. And it's obvious to everyone else, you know, but it's just like when you finally apprehend for yourself that your own age is farther advanced than you ever thought it would be. Like I said before the show, I got friends who are retiring now. So including you, you're retiring at the end of the year. So
shit, I wish.
Well, eventually, I mean, soonish, you're reaching that point where you're going to retire.
Less than four years.
Okay. I'm glad that you're going to be a firefighter for a while. Cause I would hate to see you fired from Failure to Stop because you're technically not a first responder. You know, that would suck.
Get my walking papers.
Rule changes. I was right about kickoff. First of all,
you absolutely were. Good.
Called it Pat McAfee. Actually, Pat McAfee isn't the one that was saying it wouldn't happen. I believe it was Mike Florio who was saying that it was very, very small chances that the NFL would adopt these rules. I was in favor of the kickoff change. They're adopting sort of a hybrid kickoff model that was very similar to what the XFL was using. We covered this a few weeks ago in an episode about what could be changing with the kickoff rule as they were proposing adoption of that. And I thought it was exciting. You know, in the XFL in 2020, when they were doing that, they actually had quite a few run backs for touchdowns, which we're just coming off of a Super Bowl in which we had no returns at all. Every single kickoff or every single kick was just a touchback, and it
boring.
Was very, very boring. It was very boring. It's the most exciting play in football, according to lots of people, including who's the guy that used to coach for the Bears? He was the one that was commenting on it. I forgot his name right at the last second, but it's the most exciting and dynamic play in football. It's a game. It's a play where a lot of injuries used to take place, and that was the reason why they were saying they were getting rid of it. It was kind of at the height of the Will Smith, panic over CTE and concussions and all that. And so they were getting rid of it. But now we're going to be going to a hybrid model where, I'll read to you a little bit about it.
I think you have the wrong graphic.
Well, I didn't mean to put that one on the screen. But that's about the hip drop tackle that's going away. We're gonna cover that next.
We'll get to that next. I'm a dumb fireman, and I recognize this. And reading, when they explain the rule changes, in text, for me it was just hard for me to visualize. I mean, granted, it's giving you the yard lines and all that, but I'm a visual person, so I know you showed one clip a couple weeks ago. And I started looking into it a little bit more because I wasn't sure how I felt about it. I didn't like what we have currently, but I didn't know if I'd like this change. But after watching some of the graphics that they had put together of showing how it actually works, where guys are lining up, how, you can't take off until, the ball's caught, or physically seeing it, it makes sense to me. And I kind of like it. I wasn't sure how I was going to feel about it, but I like it.
I think any change over consistent touchbacks is going to be better because, during that Super Bowl and during many games last year, it's just like, well, they're doing this play and it's garbage time because nothing's going to happen. They're not going to run it back for a touchdown. Like back in the day, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, the kickoff was like, it was so important because like if your team was down by, if it was a 2-score game, and you're running out of time. You know, it's, you know, 6 minutes, 7 minutes left in the fourth quarter. The kickoff is a huge opportunity for you because you can run that back right now and you can get a touchdown and you can start catching up. And then what's going to happen after you score? Well, they're going to kick it off to you again and you have another chance to do it all over again. So running it back for a touchdown is highly unlikely, of course, all the time, but at least for the prospect of field position, it was always very, very exciting.
Well, and it's either going to help you or it's going to hurt you. I mean, look how many fumbles we see. Those guys colliding, you know, full speed, guy gets a helmet on the ball and it, you know, it goes flying 15 yards that way. They recover and run it back. I mean, it's just, it is exciting in the fact that it could go either way. You break through and you score that touchdown or get good field position, or your guy gets blasted, ends up fumbling the ball, and then the other team gets. So it just puts, for either team, it puts a little bit more skin in the game, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the fumbles, obviously, you know, at that point, if you're attempting a run back, you know, when you could, even, you know, back in the day, you could, of course, take a touchback as well if the ball was kicked that far. But, you know, now they're going to run it back if their situation is dire enough where they need to be producing things like that. And if you fumble the ball, that it's pretty much over for you. But it's a dramatic swing in the game that's being taken completely away. It's one play in which you can totally determine or redetermine the outcome of the game, and it's hugely exciting for that reason.
Absolutely.
So during the 2024 season, kickers will continue to kick from the 35-yard line, but the other 10 players on the kickoff team will line up at the receiving team's 40-yard line. So they're going to be lined up in front of the kicker. At least 9 members of the return team will line up in a setup zone between the 35 and the 30-yard line. Up to 2 returners can line up in the landing zone between the goal line and the 20-yard line. So meaning if the kicker kicks the ball to the left or kicks the ball to the right, there's 2 returners who can take the ball. And I think that adds some dynamic excitement too on kickoffs. The guy who's kicking the ball at least has some idea that he's either kicking it into the end zone for a touchback, or he knows which guy's going to grab the ball. And like I said, this past season, it didn't matter because they would just take the touchback. But so no one other than the kicker and the returner can move the ball until it hits the ground or it hits a player inside the landing zone, meaning, you know, if he touches it, he doesn't catch it, it's a live ball. Touchbacks will be marked at the 30-yard line, and no fair catches will be allowed. No fair catches, man. Could you believe that? That's awesome. In the event a team wants to attempt an onside kick, it will have to inform officials of its intent and would then be allowed to use the NFL's traditional formation. No surprise onside kicks will be allowed. I don't know how I feel about that. I mean, I guess you have to say, well, we're not going to do any surprise onside kicks because the way that your team has to line up, you have to line up for the proper kick. So
yeah, you're going to lose something. You're going to lose something one way. You know, you have to compromise somewhere, I guess.
Yeah, and onside kicks, the way that the rules have changed with that too, fewer than 1% of onside kicks are recovered by the team that's kicking anymore anyway. So that's another huge, I wouldn't call it a trick play because everyone knows it's coming, but it's a gadget play. It's a unique football play. It's something that you don't see a lot that has also basically been neutered. So by the way, folks, this is the good news on what's changing the NFL. They're going to be following the structure and the philosophy of the XFL version with a slight shift where the players are aligned. In the XFL, they lined up further downfield between the returning team's 30 and 35-yard line. More than 90% of kickoffs were returned during the XFL's 2 seasons. The NFL special teams coaches who participated in designing the NFL version of this format were hoping for a return rate of at least 80%. I would love that if 8 out of 10 were being run back. And the fact that there's no fair catches, I mean, that's going to completely change the game to the point where you definitely want to watch. Even if you're not seeing this huge explosive returns, just the fact that they're just not going to fair catch it is going to be amazing. They were
outnumber 80%, but I'm with you. I hope it is that. But I mean, 80% is a stout number to go when you're making a complete and utter change to the game that we know.
Yeah. Touchback rates have dramatically increased. The return rate fell to a league record of 21% last year. So if we're talking about only 20% of the time, there's some kind of return going to 80%. That means a lot more potential returns. I know they're concerned about concussions, but concussions can happen anytime. And unless you're sitting there seeing somebody like, you know, literally wobbling or not getting up off the field after that play, you have kind of no idea necessarily when they were concussed. I think it's just, it's a dangerous and exciting play. And so that they like to say that that's where the concussions are taking place. It's a positive change. They're obviously going to take a look at this and see how it goes. And maybe it'll only last for 1 year.
That's I thought I heard that they were doing a 1 year trial. Is that correct?
Well, I mean, every year the competition committee can get together and say, we definitely don't want to do this a year. We don't want to do this again this year. So every year they get together and the teams all vote on rule changes. Case in point, you know, what we'll talk about next is the hip drop tackle or the swivel hip drop tackle, which is, you know, we're parsing things out here. We're going to try to figure out which thing is which. But so every year the teams get together and decide what they want to do. There's some other cool rule changes. I don't know if they're cool or not. Allowing teams to receive a third challenge after one successful challenge. Before, when teams had to be successful on both challenges in order to win a third. So basically, you've got to prove that the refs are doing a terrible job, challenge them constantly, win both challenges, and you'd have to do that to receive a third. Now you only have to win one out of the two to get a third. So basically, if you challenge twice and you lose both times, you don't get a third challenge. This came from the Lions, so I'm not surprised the Lions are still maybe smarting and they want to be able to have an opportunity to challenge. If there's a double foul during a down in which there's a change or changes of possession, including if one of the fouls is a post possession foul by a team during a scrimmage kick, the team last gaining possession will keep the ball after enforcement of its foul, provided it did not foul before the last gaining possession. I love reading
that's confusing rules. As shit.
Because, like, you read it, you're like, well, I don't fucking understand that at all. You want to know why the refs suck so much? It's because they have to sit down at a table. I'm like, all right, Steve, this is the situation. yes, I'm ready. Are you ready to learn? And he's like, yes, I'm ready. Tell me the rule. Okay, Steve, this is the rule. If there's a double foul during a down in which there is a change or changes of possession, including one of the fouls in a postseason foul possession by a team during a scrimmage kick, the last team gaining possession will keep the ball and again enforcement of the foul, provided it did not foul before the gas gaining possession. You understand that, Steve? Yes.
May cause nausea, diarrhea, headache.
Go out there and have a great game. And like, yes, I get it.
Well, and it's all written by attorneys. So, I mean, they want it to be to where you can barely understand it, but you have to.
Well, I think they make it so you could barely understand it, but also make it so that it's got like the most strict possible interpretation, you know,
for when you fuck it up.
Yeah.
Well, it says it right here.
But I don't know how you... And, you know, I'm a non-attorney spokesperson, so I don't know how you go out there and you enforce these rules without literally having the book in front of you. Like, see here, Bill Belichick, it says that you actually can't right. do that, you know. Here,
yeah, let me get my flip book out of my back pocket.
Yeah. So we want to talk about the swivel hip drop tackle. It's not just the hip drop tackle. It's the swivel hip drop tackle. So it's more than just that. This was something that was upsetting a lot of people because I don't know if you remember Super Bowl 34, Keith, but it ended with play where Titans players running in there. Time expires for the touchdown that would win them their first Super Bowl victory ever, Super Bowl 34. If this rule had been in effect during Super Bowl 34, it would change the entire outcome of the game. Personal foul, hip drop tackle, number 52 in the defense, half the distance to the goal, who play an untimed down. Or basically, he would be down. First of all, he's down at the half-yard line here? So
yeah, something like that.
The Titans, with this rule in play, this is what you need to know. If they were playing with modern rules in Super Bowl 34, the Titans would have had one more play to win that game. Mm-hmm. So you talk about this, you know, being a something where you don't want people getting injured or whatever. The fact is that it can massively change the outcomes of games. It would have changed the outcome of Super Bowl 34 very, very likely that the Titans would have had a chance to run it in there. What do you think about this? Because Babylon B has, of course, the best take on it is that, you know, football is over. It's fun while it lasted. Defense has ended. You know, we were talking about this a lot this past season, how rushing the quarterback, you know, was akin to roughing him, to tackling him was, you know, going to be a 15-yard penalty. We're talking about how Micah Parsons was never generating any holding penalties. Defense seems to have been outlawed in the NFL. Well, NFL owners have agreed to ban the hip drop tackle technique, where a defender uses his weight to pull the offensive playmaker to the ground. I inadvertently played that graphic a minute ago. I'm playing it for you here now. But you can see here the player in red is wrapping his arms around the waist, grabbing the ball carrier, and then using the weight to essentially drag him down. This is the play that's going to result in a 15-yard penalty. And to be honest, it's how a lot of tackles are made. In other words, defenders just aren't able to stop anybody. So the violation is going to result in a 15-yard penalty in flag games. But Troy Vincent, the NFL's executive vice president of football operations, strongly implied that it is likely to be enforced similarly to the use of the helmet rule, which typically leads to warning letters and fines in the weeks after a game rather than flags during the play, which we found frustrating because it's like, if they're violating the rules, why aren't flags being thrown?
Right, exactly.
Why are you writing rules that are essentially, it's like speeding tickets, like what, you're generating revenue for the NFL? Because if they're still going to go out there and do it, they have to do it. Because if you're an NFL player and you're not stopping that ball carrier from scoring, that's going to be the end of your career. You're going to be cut. You're failing at your job. You're going to get cut just because they'll look at you and say, like, well, you know, you didn't stop this. They're not going to care about, well, you should have performed an illegal maneuver to do this. So the players are going to do it. They're going to say, well, I guess I'm going to be essentially paying a kickback or skimming off the top of my income is going to go to the NFL because I have to commit this illegal maneuver to bring this player down. They're not going to throw a flag, so it's not going to affect the defense. It's going to affect me personally. And I'm going to basically have to pay to do my job. I know that I believe that Pat McAfee was not happy about this one. J.J. Watt said, he said this on Twitter, just fast forward to the belts with flags on them. Yeah. Because they're taking all the contact out of the game.
I'm on board with them. I think this rule change is horseshit. And I know one of our players a couple times this past year, Logan Wilson, that was kind of his MO on how to tackle. And I mean, if you've played backyard football growing up, you know, if you've played any high school sport, I mean, how else are you supposed to get somebody down that may be a little bit faster than you, but you can get hands on them? I mean, they're essentially dragging you anyway. You do a little bit of a maneuver to get them off balance and they're down, but now that's going to be a flag. I mean, I think it's ridiculous because you don't see typically in an NFL game, you know, the textbook pancake tackle where the head's down, the shoulder pads are hitting them right in the chest or in the gut, and they're going, you know, and then they're driving forward. You don't see that. These are the tackles that we see every week in and week out. So this rule change, I think, is horseshit.
The other thing that's bad is that, so the hip drop tackle is still allowed, but the swivel hip drop tackle is not allowed. So what are we inviting now? A gray area for subjective judgment calls that will let officials further influence the outcome of the game? Like, we're already mad that, you know, we don't know what a catch is. That's been going on for 10 years right now. We don't know what defensive pass interference is because they'll call defensive pass interference on a ball that's thrown that's not catchable. And this is just going to create more opportunities where the refs are going to say, well, this was this kind of hip drop tackle and not the other kind. And then of course, you know, on Monday morning when we're watching on SportsCenter, and they'll say, like, this is what, you know, we all knew was going to happen, that they were going to throw flags for, well, I mean, they're not throwing flags on these, but people are going to be fined for these situations that they shouldn't be. And that's going to affect the bottom line of the way a lot of defensive players play, but it's adding judgment calls to get wrong hands again. You guys just heard that rule that I read to you about how, like, the two fouls on the double enforcement of the changing of the possession. Like, we added that rule. That rule is not understandable by a human being, right? And now we're adding in this, whether it's a hip drop tackle or swinging swivel hip drop tackle, by giving the refs more to enforce, I think it actually makes it worse. I know the NFL, I know that football, and I want to move away from the NFL in this comment. I know that football is only a fun game and it's only an effective game because of the rules, right? Otherwise, like, the center would snap the ball, he would carry it forward, and then he scored a touchdown every single time. Or like, you would have multiple forward passes. You would forward passes from beyond the line of scrimmage. Football is a game of rules. Like, I understand that. And in many ways, I love the rules and I understand the rules, But when we're trying to change it so that the game's more watchable for TV, or we're trying to change it so the game's safer, we end up creating a whole bunch of rules that are stupid and ultimately unenforceable. And I think if you just leave the rules in place that, you know, football has had for 100 years, that it's easier to enforce, it's less confusing. I think it'll be an exciting game. Will there be injuries? Hell yeah, there's going to be injuries. I want to see people getting injured. I have also been like in favor of performance enhancing drugs for a long time. So I want to see violence on the field. It's what keeps us from needing war and from needing us to settle things in the streets. We just make bets on games. And that bet is meaningful because of the violence and the danger inherent in the game. So I just wish they would leave the game alone, stop trying to change it so that it's less dangerous.
Well, these guys know what they signed up for. And I don't want to see anybody, you know, like the concussion stuff, I get to a point. But it's one of those.
But we have better helmets. We have better helmets than ever. They used to be wearing like horse hide on their heads. They used to. You could see pictures of football games being played without helmets from you know, the 1890s and stuff. It's like it's safer than ever, but it's never going to be completely safe. Even baseball is not completely safe. You got a guy standing out there. He's throwing the ball at 100 miles an hour at a guy. You know what
and
I mean?
And it's coming back at him, and he's 60 feet 6 inches away. He's throwing 100-mile-an-hour fastball. It hits a fucking piece of lumber that is swinging pretty fast, and it's coming back twice as fast.
Basketball's not safe either. You got LeBron James out there stubbing his toe, and he's crying, you know? I don't know if you saw that video recently. Tansy sent it to me, and I forgot to put it on the show. But basically, somebody, like, accidentally bumps into LeBron James. And
it looked like he was choking himself.
He starts crying. I don't remember exactly what it is. I just remember him making up. He was acting like a big baby for someone his age. That's ridiculous. And it just makes me sad because, like, I don't think any football player would conduct himself that way. But if you think about, the football players of old, you know, the guys that didn't have teeth and stuff, they would have been laughing at him for what a pansy he is.
Can you imagine that conversation with Mike Ditka?
Mike Ditka, thank you. That is the perfect.
For fuck's sakes.
You know what they ought to do on SNL? I know they won't do this because SNL's not cool, but they should have it where Mike Ditka is like the coach of the Los Angeles Lakers and he has to put up with LeBron James. That would be amazing. They won't do it though. No one who works at SNL is even still aware of Mike Ditka. They're all so young. But
so now anybody that is a football coach, whether it's, you know, peewee, you know, summer rec, you know, whatever league, and then you get into high school and you have these kids that are wanting to go to college and have the potential to excel in college, then they go into the draft. These starting now, all of these kids are going to have to be retaught, or the new ones taught a different way to tackle. I mean, how do you do that?
I don't know. because it's a fundamental that you're changing, right? It's almost like saying, like, what if you wanted it to like change dribbling in basketball? You know what I mean? Nobody would get it right. You couldn't even put together a game that would take so much. No one's going to be able to have a fast break because all of a sudden they just don't even remember what to do. They're doing it.
It'd be double dribbles everywhere.
The whistle's blowing. Everything's wrong. I think when we were talking to Thomas Gwynn, you know, all those weeks ago about how they're trying to basically water down football to the point where it doesn't exist, I think they're exactly right, and this is another step in that direction. I like that they're changing the kickoff so that we have some action on that play. I think everyone could see that that was a pointless play. If all we're doing is a touchback, you might as well just say that on a, you know, change of possession, the ball, the other team just starts on the 30 or whatever it is.
Well, it's like it's counterproductive because, okay, we're going to give you this. There's more action here, but now we're going to
change. But now there's no – see, the thing is it's more essentially – I know it's a special teams play, but it's essentially more offense and less defense, right? So the ball gets kicked, and now it's going to be returned. So we have an offensive play occurring where a team's attempting to advance the ball down the field to score. It's essentially offense is what we're increasing. We're decreasing defense, again, by not allowing tackling, you know, right. Which is –
a key component of defense,
an essential aspect of the game. So it's just one more way in which, like I said, they're changing the game so that it appears more cool on TV, but it's watering down the essentials of the game. And to be honest, Keith, it's pushing me more towards NCAA. I don't know if they've had any major or scandalous rules changes lately. But if I can watch a traditional football game by turning on college on Saturday or the XFL this Saturday, should call it UFL, then that's probably what I'm going to do. And I know that the NFL is this huge beast that'll never go down, and it's never going to have to pay for its mistakes. Just like the government, you know, but me as someone who's watching, you know, I can tell the difference. Like I said, weeks ago when I was watching Super Bowl 30, just because I wanted to see the Cowboys win a Super Bowl, and I was watching the tape and just the things that they were allowed to do, during those plays back the way football was played in 95, it was a tremendously more interesting and fun game to watch. And even though it's played in a on the screen in a square and the resolution is terrible and you can't hardly tell what the hell's going on because there's the graphics aren't really there on the screen. Like, they don't even display the score the entire time, you know, back in 1995. They're just before they go to commercial, just a reminder, it's Rams 7, Eagles 3. You know, they would just tell you the score before they left because you had to fucking pay attention back then. Now in the ADHD generation, it's just there all the time. But I don't know.
Everybody's watching the stuff on their phones now.
Yeah. So exactly. So I don't know. These rule changes are just kind of making it not super fun for me.
Your opinion before we jump off, because I saw a couple other ones.
Go for it.
Well, I mean, Christmas in the NFL, they're going to continue to have two games. Okay. I mean, I didn't even know that even needed to be up for debate. But like this year, it says with Christmas falling on a Wednesday, those four teams will have last played on the Saturday prior, making the turnaround similar to a Sunday to Thursday turnaround. Not even sure why that was even a thing.
I don't know. Football on a Wednesday seems wrong to me, but
well, it's definitely different.
Keeps me from having to interact with my family, I guess I'm in favor of.
I'm totally with you. And then the trade deadline moving back 7 days. I mean, what do you have any opinion on? I mean, does it matter? I don't know that it matters personally.
I'm wondering what the strategy is behind that or the reasoning.
So it says, well, multiple teams suggested moving the deadline to after week 10, the Steelers post week 9 proposal was accepted. Moving it back by 7 days, this should promote more trade activity and give teams an opportunity to restock as injuries mount.
I mean, I guess it makes sense, particularly with them having an extended season now with 18 games. It just seems like maybe that's something they should have done automatically when they went to an 18 week season.
And that's where I was reading that one. I'm like, well, I mean, it should have been done already, but
I don't think it'll generate any more trades, because it's like, if you need to trade, you're going to trade. It's not like these people are, it's not fantasy football where you and I are sitting around wondering, you know, what we need to do, you know, before Thursday. There's strategy in place. There's lots of people thinking. They know what's going on with their depth chart, what's wrong, what needs to happen. They're intimately acquainted with the businesses of all 31 other teams. I don't think that they need more time, as though it's a difficult decision. I just think it's something that just brings them into line with the fact that there's additional weeks in the season, and that way you can restock for injuries, like it said.
They covered a lot of stuff.
There's a lot of stuff in there, yeah.
I didn't see the whole thing.
Did you want to talk about your baseball scandal?
Oh, yeah.
So this guy who plays for the Dodgers, is that who he plays for?
Dodgers now, yeah.
Yeah. Well, go for it, Keith.
Oh, I'm trying to figure out. I didn't know we were going right there. But, yeah, has been all over the news. I mean, obviously, we know gambling and baseball do not go together. R.I.P. Pete Rose and your chance to go to the Hall of Fame, the Hit King. But, I can never pronounce his name right. Shohei Ohtani.
You don't have to pronounce his name right on this show.
Right. So, Ohtani, Japanese pitcher slash hitter. He's great on both sides, whether he's pitching or whether he's hitting. Signed a huge 10-year, $700 million deal. Right. So one of the biggest contracts, if not the biggest contract in professional sports. He has an interpreter because he doesn't speak English. And it has come to light that his interpreter, the Dodgers are alleging, stole money from Ohtani to place bets with bookmakers. So this hit the news. And of course, everybody here in Cincinnati went in all kinds of an uproar because he's associated with gambling, and Pete Rose, you know, I'm using quotes, you know, got fucked by not being banned from baseball on the he's on the ban list, naughty list, and seems to be where he'll never get off of that. He's appealed it many times. Well, there's a lot to that still needs to come to light with this, in the fact that his bookie was making bets in Otani's hometown in Japan with Japanese bookmakers. Like, so to the tune clear, of like $4 million.
The alleged
dollars.
Crime took place in Japan, right?
What's that?
Are we saying this crime took place in Japan?
That's one of the alleged offenses.
Why the fuck do we care about anything going on in Japan?
Because he's playing Major League Baseball.
All right, I'm trying to hang on.
Well, the interpreter's not, but Otani is. But money was coming out of Otani's account. Now, you sign a deal like that, and he deferred a lot of it toward after when he, you know, when his contract's up, you know, 10 years from now. So I think, I can't even remember what he's playing for each year. Like, it never goes up. He's playing for the same amount. I think it's, what was it, $2 million. I think he's playing for $2 million a year. And then he gets the rest of, or $20 million a year, whatever it is.
I was going to say, it's a lot more than two.
$20 million a year. And then he gets the rest of his money. It was a good structured contract. I mean, to take care of himself down the road.
Yeah. But you said ultimately it's $700 million.
Yeah. Right?
Okay.
So over,
which, you know, he obviously is hurting for funds, and it makes sense that he would be gambling when you're down and out, man. Sometimes you just got to roll the dice and see what you get.
Right. But this, you know, so his interpreter starts, you know, making these bets. Well, my thought is, I'm watching my bank account, and now I'm, again, just a dumb fireman that doesn't make anywhere near that money, but I'm still watching my bank account. And if I'm seeing some weird transactions, I'm going to call it out. He said the other day he had no idea until this was brought to light, you know, by the press. But everybody's up in arms, you know, comparing it to Pete Rose. And I said, hold on, I'm a huge Pete Rose fan. I think he should be in the Hall of Fame, even though he made a mistake. He fucked up. It was never proven, because he bet on baseball, admitted to betting on baseball, bet on the Reds, admitted to betting on the Reds. He lied about it at first, but when you're under the spotlight, I mean, I guess that may happen. But it was never proven. He always bet on the Reds.
To me, the lying is actually a bigger deal than the actual betting. I don't care about betting on your team. I think, you know, the lying is something where you just explain to him, like, don't now, Pete Rose, don't you lie, you know, and then it's just, it's settled with that, right?
And all the bets that were in question during way back when, he bet on the Reds to win. So it wasn't like he was trying to throw games, like he was betting them to lose and then putting in, you know, some slouch that can't hit a curveball or whatever. But people are comparing it, you know, around here. I mean, all over, but of course, being here in Cincinnati. And I'm like, hold on, it's different. They have to prove that Otani or his interpreter were actually betting on baseball. I mean, shit, they could have been betting on, you know, cricket or whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, the league has rules, you know, about gambling, which also brings in the fact that you have all these professional teams or leagues now that are partnering with FanDuel, you know, MGM Sports, you know, sports betting. Again, counterproductive. If you're trying to keep betting out of the game, you know, especially baseball, which is America's pastime, you know, the sacred game. But now Otani's getting compared to Pete Rose and Shoeless Joe Jackson, which both have a tie to the Cincinnati Reds with the 1919 Black Sox scandal,
yeah.
But it's just, I mean, it's funny to me, and there's every day more stuff's coming out, and, you know, there's been a little bit of Otani's camp being kind of hush-hush and not wanting to talk. He made a statement, like I said, not knowing that any of this was going on. I find it very hard to believe. They were supposedly best friends. You don't know that your dude's making bets. Everybody that I hang out with gambles, and I know exactly what bet they made, because as soon as the end of a game happens, they're like, fuck,
yeah,
didn't get that one. So I find it very hard to believe. I just don't think that there's complete transparency right now, which, yeah, while they're investigating it, and MLB launched a huge inquiry into this, because now they're going back and looking at some of his stats to where potentially when he was pitching, did he throw games? So, I mean, he's under a microscope right now, but I found it amusing. And I sent you that Twitter video of Pete Rose after it came out, you know, sitting in a restaurant or a bar, wherever he was at. And he was like, well, if I had an interpreter back in the 70s and 80s, I'd have gotten away scot-free.
Yeah, because he'd have somebody to blame. If you know, it's kind of surprising he wasn't able to blame his bookmaker or something, which I'm not anti-Pete Rose, and I don't know enough about it to really comment on it. But yeah, it is convenient that you could just blame the interpreter for doing whatever he wants to do and pocketing the money. Meanwhile, Ohtani, who, I don't know. Am I right that my guts tell me that I don't like him? Like, I don't know enough about baseball to really form an opinion, but I'm starting to not really like the guy. But if they are betting, you know, that I guess, you know, I can understand why Pete Rose would be pissed off about that Ohtani basically gets a pass and, you know, he can't even get into the Hall of Fame.
Well, they're putting him as the poster child because Ohtani is the poster child because of the huge ass contract that they allowed to happen.
Yeah.
So Major League Baseball doesn't want their image tarnished. Like, oh, look, we allowed, you know, and the Dodgers as well. Look, we put all this money in and now we've got, you know, nothing out of it. You know, if he gets banned or whatever, I don't foresee that happening. But
the thing is that about the Black Sox scandal is that professional sports, you know, really used to its continued existence would hinge on the fact that it wasn't fixed. If sports is fixed, then there's no reason for anyone. You can't enjoy the game. There's no purity to the game. The World Series being thrown, for example, is one of the most egregious things that you could ever do. That was the 1919 Black Sox scandal. So far, you know, what does Ohtani bet on? Definitely not the World Series. I don't know any specifics about any games like that. But I think we're all past the point now where we think that games are fixed. It's not. The operations of every team is so huge now. Like the Black Sox was literally just the guys on the player and the general manager and like the equipment manager. Like those are the guys. Those are the guys that could collude, you know, to throw the game and then, you know, go out for beers afterwards. It's not like that anymore. We're talking about multi-million dollar corporations. We're talking about.
That was a point, you know, when they were sharing gloves in the outfield.
Yeah. Now teams have like stockholders and shit, you know, with the Packers and multi-billionaire guys like, you know, Jerry Jones. There's too many moving parts to most things going on. And with a game like baseball, you know, for you to throw that game, it would be fairly obvious, I would think, in the modern era. And if it's just Ohtani making bets, you know, no one's colluding with them, then I don't think he necessarily has the ability to change the outcome of games. I don't know what to say else about it other than I hope he's not betting, but I don't like the guy. So we'll see how it goes with him playing for the Dodgers this year. I don't know. I've just decided for no reason not to like a human being. I think that's my right as an American, that I don't have to know much about anyone. I don't have to look into it. I don't have to question his character or meet him. I just decide I don't like him.
I can make judgments all I want.
I'm making judgments. Thank you for talking to me more about baseball. I'm actually kind of getting excited about baseball, and talking about it makes me excited for it. So how many days are we till opening day at this point?
Opening day actually has already started last week in South Korea.
We talked about that.
Which I hate.
Other fucking country.
And the Reds opening day was earlier today.
Oh, well, congratulations on the Reds.
You know what's bullshit, though? And you talk about rule changes real quick. Years and years and years, the Reds, because they were the MLB's first professional baseball team, we were the very first game, the very first pitch to start every season for so many years. And then, like, I can't even remember, 8 years ago or whatever, they started changing it to where then, you know, the Reds would have a 4:10 start versus a noon start. And they took that tradition completely away. And this town lost its ever-loving mind. So just shows you every organization is going to change tradition. They're going to change rules, and I don't like change.
If they ever change it so that the Cowboys aren't playing on Thanksgiving, I will riot. I know that the Eagles a couple years ago wanted to make it so that maybe the Cowboys play, but it's not always a home game or whatever. Or I think they full on wanted the Cowboys not to be able to, that it should just be rotate or something. You got to remember, Eagles, that started back in the day when no one fucking wanted to play on Thanksgiving because they wanted to be with their families. And the Cowboys being a young, I think it started in 66 is when they started playing on Thanksgiving. But they wanted national exposure. So they said, well, we'll be the team that goes out there and plays, and that way we'll be on every single person's TV and we'll get the exposure and we'll become America's team, you know. And the Eagles didn't want to do that back then. So you missed your chance. Your fathers and your grandfathers missed their chance, Eagles.
Too bad. So sad.
I also love various traditions. I don't know that football has the same traditions that necessarily that baseball did. Case in point, I didn't even know that about the Reds. But if they do change things like that, I will riot. And I'm already mad that they're changing other traditions, like the tradition of tackling. A time-honored tradition in football, you know, possibly being changed. Speaking of changes coming in football, in 2020, I was a huge fan of the XFL. Why? Because it had been a while since there had been a spring league. Yeah, I was one of those chumps who was a fan of the XFL in 2001, back when it was sort of a joke compared to what it is now. That in 2020, they started taking spring football seriously. They revived the XFL name. None of the teams came back. The ownership group was completely different. Vince McMahon was not involved. In fact, it was Oliver Luck, Andrew Luck's father, that was the commissioner of the league. And the game was exciting. It was fun to watch. You got to listen to the referees discuss in real time what the penalty was going to be. You had Dean Blandino, actually making sure the calls were correct, because the XFL was born in the era when gambling was just going to be a thing. You knew it was going to happen. And so you had to have an excellent, transparent league to show that they were not throwing anything. The things were going great for 5 weeks. And my team, the Houston Roughnecks, were 5-0, undefeated. And then something particular happened. A vendor selling nachos in Seattle gave COVID to 20,000 people in a day.
Oh, your storytelling ability is on point.
Thank you.
I feel like I'm there.
That was bad. So basically the Seattle Dragons had a game, and then all of a sudden, I don't know if I'm the only one that remembers this, but we used to have like these heat maps that would show like where most of the contagion was at.
Yep.
China's full blown red, even though somehow years later, we don't remember that it started in China. United States is green, some yellow. And all of a sudden, boom, in Seattle, it's red. And it's because some guy serving nachos had COVID, sneezed in everyone's nachos, gave every single person in attendance that day COVID. It was a bad deal. And so after all these years, the XFL finally launches. And they happen to launch in the worst possible year in all of our lifetimes, 2020. I think we all look back and think like, man, like we've had hard years and bad things continue to happen, but like 2020 was a year where just it all happened at once. And so they're 5 weeks in, and COVID shuts down everything. COVID's turning off every single thing that's happening. Like, you know, you can't even go in the gas station without having a mask on. So let alone the sports league. So it was already so fragile. Starting a sports league is a money losing proposition. There's so many great stories out there about NFL teams that have folded. Case in point, Keith, the Cincinnati Reds were also once an NFL team, but they folded because it's expensive to put together a team and then hope your ticket sales can somehow get you to the point where you're actually able to pay your players.
Right.
You have to go on the red to start. And so they suspended operations halfway through the season. It was very sad because I was really, really enjoying the games. It was fun to watch. We were looking at players that couldn't make the 53-man squad, right? The Rock is now the senior partner along with his ex-wife, Danny Garcia. It's not weird at all, you know, that a husband and ex-wife own a football league.
I didn't realize that she was involved.
Yeah, she's actually like the president of football operations. He's just like the money. So she's the one that like ran the business.
So it's not different than any normal marriage.
Yeah, you're right. It's using a great
base model. I mean,
it's actually every sports ownership model, but without the pretense. But anyway, so their whole thing was like, well, this is all the 54th man, right? This is all the people that get cut by the NFL that just couldn't get a roster spot. Sometimes you're choosing between two players that are equally good, and you just have to cut one. And where are they going to go? Well, they go nowhere. You know, they hope to go to a practice squad, or they hope to get, you know, signed at the trade deadline or free agency or something. You hope that they come back, but you got to remember an NFL player doesn't have a long shelf life, right? So like the average length of an NFL career is 3 years. these guys have a small window where if they don't make that 53-man roster, they can still go out there and do something. They can have amazing games, but they don't have an opportunity to do that. So that's the XFL is the league of opportunity, as they said. So they played, had a good run. They were out for a couple years after COVID and the rebuilding after the change of ownership. Oliver Luck is out. And now it's Daryl Moose Johnson, formerly of the Cowboys. He's also a commentator on Fox, but he's sort of the commissioner of the now combined USFL and XFL. The XFL did come back for a season last year in which the Arlington Renegades won it all, which was amazing because they were having a losing season, and then they swapped quarterbacks before the trade deadline, and they were able to come back and win it all. I'm sure you didn't pay attention, but it was amazing. It was fun to watch. It just shows you that anything can happen. No lead is safe in the XFL, as they used to say, just because of the way that the rules are structured there. But now the USFL had come back from the 80s. Basically, quick, what happened with the USFL is that in the 80s, you had an experimental league startup. This is all from the same guy that got the New Orleans Saints going. And they had a great first season, and then they overexpanded their second year. They went from 8 teams to like 18 teams, which is way too fast to expand. And all of a sudden you had teams folding midseason, like the Chicago Blitz, just like after 4 weeks, just like, yeah, I don't want to own this team anymore. And the guy disappeared. And like the players used to joke that like when they would get paid, they would literally race to the bank because only a certain number of them were going to get paid and the checks were going to bounce.
Make sure it clears.
So that was the situation there. That's how hard it is to start a football league. Like you have to have money and like emergency credit and all this. So they overextended themselves. Well, then they were able to convince a big financier and mogul with a lot of money to buy a team. He bought the New Jersey Generals. I'm talking about Donald Trump.
I remember that.
So what happened was that Donald Trump buys the New Jersey Generals, but it's still not really a winning proposition. I think he realizes that buying into this is not going to work. So what Donald Trump does is he starts fucking shit up to try to make money out of this. And you could just see that like his goals are all business oriented and not football oriented. The guy doesn't care about football, which is fine. Basically what he does, he says, you know, the USFL is about to die here. We have got to make some aggressive moves. This is what we're going to do. We're not going to play in the spring. We're going to play in the fall. And everyone else is like, the NFL plays in the fall. And they're like, I know that already. Damn it. You know,
dummy. Donald Trump. I know, dummy.
He's like, I already know that. Well, what we're going to do is we're going to move to the fall, and then we're going to do that, and then we're going to sue the NFL as a monopoly because they've got broadcasting rights on CBS, Fox, and NBC. Or this time in the 80s, it would have been CBS, NBC, and ABC. Fox actually didn't exist in the early 80s, yeah. But they didn't have Fox Sports until much later. But it's those three networks have a monopoly, and what we're going to do is we're going to say, well, we can't get games broadcast. Because the NFL has a broadcasting monopoly. So we're going to sue them. We're going to sue them. And it doesn't matter if anything changes or not. They're going to be paying us big time. And we're going to get a huge injection of capital into the USFL, which means money is going to come back to me. And it's going to come back to the USFL and hopefully save the USFL. So they sue the NFL and they say, well, you know, we have a couple propositions for you. Either you guys all go to CBS or all go to NBC or all go to ABC or, you know, somehow divide this up so that we can have a network, basically break your contract with these broadcasters, which I'm sure the broadcasters were thrilled that their deals with the NFL were being interfered with by this little shit company, the USFL, right. And Donald Trump. And no one has ever been a fan of Donald Trump. It was funny. An episode of Golden Girls was on my house recently, and this show's from the 80s, and B. Arthur just drops his bomb about Donald Trump, and you're like, what year was the show made? It's like, people have hated Donald Trump forever. You forgot that, apparently. But anyway, so they sue the NFL, and it goes before a jury, and the jury decides, yep, the NFL's got a broadcasting monopoly. It's unfair. You can't have a monopoly in this country. We've got antitrust laws. And so the USFL's like, fantastic. Thank you. And then the jury's like, but you did kind of create this problem for yourself by moving yourself to the fall when you had no monopoly problem in the spring, which is where you have traditionally operated. So we're going to award you damages of $1 So the UFL, USFL got paid $1, which, because it's an antitrust lawsuit, got tripled to $3. Oh. So obviously the cost of their litigation and everything that they had to do to try to win that anti-monopoly suit bankrupted them. They were about to go under. They said, well, we're ceasing operations for the 84 season or the 87 season. And they're like, well, hold on. Like, let's not all go our separate ways, because it looks like the NFL union, players union, is about to break up. And, you know, if they don't want to play for the NFL, maybe they'll come play for us. Well, they did go on strike in the NFL, but nothing ever came of it. No one ever came to the USFL. And it's sad because the USFL has actually had many great players. Herschel Walker, Joe Montana, Reggie White. These players all came from the USFL. So the USFL was cool back in the day. So a couple years ago, they revived all the trademarks of the USFL. None of the people are involved, which you couldn't get all of them because some of them committed suicide over this debacle. I mean, when Donald Trump, you know, ruins the USFL and it's everything that you believed and invested yourself in, you might just kill yourself, particularly since Donald Trump would go on to be fine. So the USFL is there. But so now we've got two spring leagues last year. XFL is playing first. They kind of go on the week right after NFL's done playing. USFL kind of plays later in the summer. But they're ultimately competing against each other. And there's been a couple other spring leagues going on in the past few years that can't seem to come out ahead financially. These games fold. What was that other spring league that was out a few years ago? It was the American Football Conference, something like that?
I can't remember what.
Remember. Case in point, they don't even stick around long enough for us to remember.
Yep.
Just a couple years from now. So you've got these two powerhouse spring leagues, powerhouse as far as spring football goes, with the XFL and the USFL. Well, this year they decided to merge because they couldn't compete against each other and survive. So we've got eight teams in the combined UFL, two conferences, XFL conference and the USFL conference, which I think is cool. They're actually kind of doing it the way that the NFL and the AFL, when they merged, they created two conferences, the NFC and the AFC. So they're kind of doing it that way. There's eight teams. So starting on this Saturday, just the day after tomorrow, March 30th, the Birmingham Stallions, which is the champions of the USFL, are going to play the Arlington Renegades, which are the champions of the XFL from last season. So the first game, which is Saturday.
Sure yeah.
They're the champions. Okay, it's the championship rematch. This is one of the main.
I was thinking a year before.
This is one of the main things I know.
I was thinking of the year before.
That's all right. So the Stallions have been really big in the USFL. Great team. All the teams actually played in Birmingham last year because they wanted to go with this. We don't want COVID to destroy us the way it destroyed the XFL. So every single player plays in a bubble. They had two fields in Birmingham where all the games were played. This will be the first year where the USFL actually plays in their home fields across the country. So that's exciting too. But on Saturday, the Birmingham Stallions are going to play the Arlington Renegades, Choctaw Stadium. This is going to be on Fox. Should be fun. After that, the St. Louis Battlehawks are going to take on the Michigan Panthers. This is at 4. So the Battlehawks are an exciting team. The Battlehawks have done well in the XFL. They've never won a championship, either in 2020 or in 2023. But the Battlehawks are playing at where the St. Louis Rams used to play. You got to remember the debacle when the Rams moved out of St. Louis. Basically, they still owed the city was still paying off the stadium. The St. Louis Rams got the city to agree to pay for upgrades on the stadium. And of course the city's willing to do that because we're like, well, we get to keep the Rams this way. The Rams draw a lot of revenue into the city. We love the Rams, you know. The Super Bowl could possibly be played here in St. Louis. It's important that you keep the Rams in St. Louis. So the people of St. Louis are taxed, and they, you know, which I think is bullshit. I don't think taxpayer money should ever go to a sports endeavor.
I'm living it here in Cincinnati.
I know you are. So then the Rams leave and go back home to L.A., and St. Louis is left holding the bag, and St. Louis basically got fucked over by that. So then the Battlehawks, when the XFL rolls out in 2020, they're like, well, we're going to put a team in St. Louis. Like, that's a woman scorned right there. They're going to be looking for a new lover, so we're going to put a team there. Battlehawks in St. Louis, they have been far and away been selling tickets. They will sell out their games there in St. Louis. That city is so ready to embrace football, having a professional team there again. They love the Battlehawks. So whenever we look at the XFL as a success, we're always looking at the Battlehawks because they sell so many tickets. They're going up against the Michigan Panthers. This is a team that has not done well since the USFL has been revived. They were historically very good back in the 80s, but again, there's really no connection between the Panthers of the 80s and the Panthers of today. You can't really say, well, the Panthers are going to be good because they were in the 80s back when they were beating, you know, the Philadelphia Stars. They haven't done well. Maybe they'll be doing better this year. That's a team that's an option for you, Keith. I know that you hate Michigan, so
it's not going to happen.
Not going to happen. All right.
I've been doing my research. You'd be proud of me.
I'm always proud of you all the time, and I love you. I want to put it on the air.
You're going in proximity of where I live, and that's going to be my team, which I love the idea. It's not going to be Michigan.
Well, how
you brought up the Memphis Showboats.
We'll get there.
Actually,
we'll get there. I'm going in order.
All right. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. So then Sunday morning, Easter, what better way to celebrate Easter than by watching the DC Defenders take on the San Antonio Brahmas? The DC Defenders have been a team that has done well in the XFL the past couple of seasons that the XFL has operated. The DC Defenders have like crazy fans. They have this thing called the beer snake where they take all these plastic cups.
Dude, and I love seeing that.
They pour the beer all throughout the stadium. And so fans are drinking beers and pouring beers through the beer snake. And somehow it's already a thing. Like if you ever wanted a fan base to sort of already have a thing that they do, like how like Pittsburgh has their terrible towels or like how like the Philadelphia Eagles have wife beating and alcoholism. This team already has their fan base is already so they're already so passionate and they already have their own traditions. I was kind of stuck initially when the XFL started between the DC Defenders because I'm from Virginia, so I didn't really know if I could get on board with the DC Defenders, but they have played historically well in the past couple of years. They're an exciting team to watch. Their DC is kind of close to you, so if you wanted to get on board with the Defenders, you could do that. The San Antonio Brahmas are a new team, even for a revamped XFL. I don't think that they were there the first year. XFL came under some heat because it was like most of their teams were in Texas. Is that the Houston Roughnecks, the Arlington or Dallas Renegades, and then the San Antonio Brahmas. The Brahmas were being coached by the guy from Pittsburgh. What was his name? I'm sorry, I don't remember his name.
I would try to help, but I can't.
No, how could you?
give me a general description.
Well, now their coach is Wade Phillips. But last year it was, let me look it up online here. Well, it doesn't say online. It looks like they wanted to just erase the past so no one gets to know who was their coach last year. I'll think of it as soon as the show's over, I'm sure.
That's usually how it works.
It doesn't matter. The Brahmas didn't do well last year. Their head coach, who was a former Pittsburgh Steelers player, didn't necessarily transition well into coaching, but Wade Phillips has coached well. He coached the Houston Roughnecks, their 5-0 season, and you know, he's a good coach. I don't know if you're a Wade Phillips fan, but if you are, you could possibly get into the San Antonio Brahmas because he's coaching the team this year. Memphis Showboats are going to be playing after that on the afternoon of Easter. They're going to be playing at 3 p.m. Memphis Showboats, an old USFL team, are going to be taking on my Houston Roughnecks, playing at Rice Stadium. That game will be on ESPN. I'm just going to be going for Houston because that's who I always have. Actually, in the USFL, this was a terrible Sophie's choice, but I was actually a Michigan Panthers fan when I was watching XFL games or USFL games. And now that they're in the same league, like I have to decide. Like they're in the same division even now. So they're in the USFL division, so I had to choose. So I'm going with the Roughnecks. With that in mind, Keith, now that you know just scant little about any of the teams, you know, what's your decision? What team are you going to be rooting for this weekend?
I'm going to my team's going to be the St. Louis Battlehawks.
That'll be fun.
Couple reasons.
Go for it.
A, it's only 5 hours from here.
Yeah.
Memphis is about 8, roughly.
Yeah. Plus Showboats.
Maybe not 8, but I think St. Louis is closer. But also because my boy AJ McCarron is a quarterback.
Oh yeah, that's perfect, man. Yeah, AJ McCarron. I think he even played for them a couple years ago. It's nice when you see that.
That's why I was asking about the championship because he did because I wasn't following it, USFL, but he had a great season. I thought they won the championship, but I apparently was wrong. But then we ended up stealing him back for when Joe Burrow got hurt. He came back to the Bengals, and after the end of the season, he said, "I'm going back to St. Louis." So that's my team.
Here's the best part, Keith. You get tickets right now. I'm looking at Ticketmaster right now. You can get tickets for $22.
Let's meet in St. Louis and go.
Honestly, I don't think it's a terrible idea. I could potentially do that at some point. That would be fun to do that.
Take this show on the road.
We'd have to look at the schedule.
Sideline commentating.
See, yeah. We're breaking down all the hot USFL action.
We should get media passes, wear vests.
Yes, we're media, technically.
Yeah.
But we should see, look at the schedule and see when Houston plays there, because that way we can, you know, represent our respective teams. But
I like it.
The thing is about it is you cannot go see an NFL game for like anything less than $300 anymore.
By the time
I have pictures of me going to a Cowboys Vikings game a few years ago. I'm literally in the last row, like I'm literally touching the ceiling, and like there's a guy next to me. He's drinking Mountain Dew, but then he's also taking oxygen because that's how high up we are. And like the field is actually smaller than if I was watching it on my cell phone. I actually took out the game on my cell phone and watched it on my cell phone because I wanted to be able to see the game. You could go to an XFL game, and for the price of a movie, you can actually watch a football game. This is professional football. These guys are going to be competitive. You know, we don't know which teams are going to do well yet. We don't know which, you know, games to recommend or whatever, but it's something to do that is old-fashioned. Going to a football game, it's something that you can make happen without actually having to, like, you know, take money out of your child's college fund. And they play for the love of football. That was kind of their slogan in 2020. And it's something that's desperately missing from modern NFL. It's about money. It's about control. It's about safety in the NFL. I think the XFL being underdogs, and the USFL as well, being underdogs, they have something to prove in terms of entertainment value, in terms of offering a pure football product. I think that they see that the way the NFL is going and the people like you and me aren't happy about it. And they're trying to give you an alternative. Some of it's innovative. Some of it's new. The idea that you could go for a 1, 2, or 3 point conversion. There's no kicking extra points in the XFL. I'm not sure if they're doing that this year, but like that's historically what has been. Their model has been that we're going to find new ways to entertain you and new ways to be transparent about our officiating. And most of all, we're going to play a pure football sport. So if you like the game of football, you're sick of the NFL's no fun league bullshit. You're sick of these divas who, you know, the base player in the NFL makes more than $1 million. Every single time you see someone walk onto an NFL field, they're a millionaire. Not to like throw like, you know, politics or envy into it, but it's like those are not common everyday guys. These guys are the ones who are like, they work construction jobs. They work at the grocery store, and they have to pick up their kids after practice. Right. So they're everyday guys that you can root for and you can have fun. And you can watch football in the spring, and I think that's why I'm going to get excited about it. And it's a hard sell to people because the NFL dominates over everything, and people look at it as like some kind of joke league or something. But all I say to the people that won't watch a professional league in the spring is you will literally watch amateurs play on Saturday. You watch, you know, you watch high school football. You're watching kids who can't do anything other than like run it for 2 yards, and then they get a nosebleed, and then they have to, you know, they're out of the game. These guys are professionals. They want to play at a higher level. Each and every one of them is intrinsically motivated. They want to get an NFL contract. We've had a lot of USFL players and XFL players go to the NFL and have had great success there. If you just look into that even a little bit, you'll find that's the case. Brandon Aubrey came for the USFL. He played for the Stallions. Now he's kicking for the Cowboys. They had a return man, Devontae Turpin, where he's on special teams now. He was the USFL's most valuable player. They have good talent there, and you can watch it this spring, this Saturday. I encourage you to forsake your loved ones on Easter and watch a game of football.
I love that advice. I think it's perfect.
Anything else, Keith?
No, that was a fun show.
It was more fun at the end. All right.
You always think that.
I know.
Because it's the end.
All right, guys. Tomorrow morning, Eric's got a case breakdown that's going to melt your mind. Your eyeballs will literally boil and seep out of your sockets. It's so cool. I can't even talk about what's going to happen on tomorrow's big case breakdown, but you're not going to want to miss it. That's tomorrow at 11. On Monday, we'll be back with live comedy. Tuesday is another true crime episode with me and Kendra. And then on Wednesday, of course, we got some show. Oh, Last Call, the political stuff where Eric will tell you what's going on without depressing you. And Thursday, we'll be back here for a legal shift. Keith, when's your next episode of One More and I'm Out of Here?
We'll be going live Friday at 5 tomorrow.
Friday afternoon. So make sure you catch that. Check up on Keith. They're going to have all the news that's fit to print there in Cincinnati. Anything you want to talk about, Kiefer and Dan are down in his mom's basement telling you everything you need to know, everything you want to hear about. It's a very exciting show. Wish you all the best, Keith. And, of course, we'll catch you next Thursday. And, of course, we'll see you on Comm Center.